Monday, December 25th. And this is Zimbabwe Today.
The president has been put under house arrest together with Professor Jonathan Moyo. He was the higher education minister, finance minister Ignatius Chombo, and several other ministers.
That was VOA's Gibbs Dube reporting on the day the Zimbabwe army took control of the government. Good evening, I'm Kutsunai Mutatwa.
And I'm Chidonjere with a special pre-recorded edition of VOA Zimbabwe Today. We're starting off by taking a long look at the unexpected events this year that brought political change to Zimbabwe.
The spark came in early November when President Robert Mugabe fired Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa, his longtime comrade in arms. Many people in Zimbabwe assumed that move was intended to open the way for the president's wife, Grace Mugabe, to become vice president and then eventually to replace her husband.
Here in Johannesburg today, the head of the Zimbabwe War Veterans Association summoned journalists and said that they are fighting mad over this, not so fighting mad that they would ever consider a coup, but fighting mad enough that they're going to put up a slate with the deposed vice president at the head of it to contest the election in 2018, which, as you know, Mr. Mugabe is going to be running in.
That was Anita Powell, VOA Southern Africa correspondent, reporting on the anger many Zimbabweans felt after Mnangagwa was fired.
A week later, the army fired back with a stern warning.
The current purging and cleansing process in ZANU-PF, which so far is targeting mostly members associated with our liberation history, is a serious cause of concern to us in the defense forces. We must remind those behind the current treacherous shenanigans that when it comes to matters of protecting our revolution, the military will not hesitate to step in.
That was the head of the Zimbabwe Defense Forces, General Constantino Chiwenga.
And just a day later, the army moved. What started as Twitter posts showing military vehicles on the roads ended with General Chiwenga saying the military had taken control of the government.
They are basically patrolling the streets, and we're told that some of them are actually guarding the president. And the president has been put under house arrest together with Professor Jonathan Moyo. He was the higher education minister, finance minister Ignatius Chombo, and several other ministers. So we're told that they have not been harmed. So, but the military perhaps is trying to come out with a transitional government. That's what we're getting right now.
The army said it had not carried out a military coup, but that its Operation Restore Legacy sought to force out corrupt elements surrounding President Mugabe.
But then it became a guessing game. What next? Mugabe and his normally very public wife went silent as rumors swirled. Neighboring countries in the Southern Africa Development Community rushed delegations to Harare to see what could be done to prevent the situation from turning violent.
Dabengwa, who heads the opposition ZAPU party, says Mugabe is now trying to exploit the regional body to remain in power. In recent days, he has been clearly resisting pressure from military officials and negotiators to quietly step down.
He wants to drag his feet. He wants to get SADC to leave things as they are, go to his ZANU-PF Congress, where his wife becomes elected as a vice president.
That was a report on November 17th from Anita Powell from Johannesburg. She was speaking with Dumiso Dabengwa, head of the opposition ZAPU party.
There was more anticipation a few days later when Mugabe appeared on national television, but he did not, as expected, announce his resignation, leaving many Zimbabweans frustrated.
I was expecting his resignation, and I expect him, I would be happy for him, despite everything that he has done, to leave with dignity and to just walk away. The general would have let him walk away peacefully and with his dignity, but he refused to do that. He's so stubborn.
Yeah, I'm disappointed. I thought the live broadcast was about him announcing his resignation, which is not what we're getting from his speech. So we more or less as a country, we're back to square one. From my view, I think my view is to go the impeachment route. Yeah, I think that's the only solution, because currently our defense forces right now, they cannot back down, considering then what has actually transpired.
And then, just a day later, as Parliament began impeachment proceedings, the Speaker of Parliament, Jacob Mudenda, interrupted proceedings.
I, Robert Gabriel Mugabe, in terms of Section 96, Subsection 1 of the Constitution of Zimbabwe, hereby formally tender my resignation as the President of the Republic of Zimbabwe with immediate effect.
Thus ending Robert Mugabe's 37 years as the leader of the nation he fought to bring into being. There were celebrations on the streets at the news, but many people were thoughtful about the future, as Kudzai Zunawashe reported.
I think change begins in smaller steps. This is the first small step, but I think we'll get there sometime. This is the beginning of the future.
Under Mnangagwa, I think Zimbabwe will be a better country. Not because we're getting rid of the system or changing the constitution like tomorrow morning, but I'm sure most countries will be willing to invest in Zimbabwe.
Other Zimbabweans, however, expressed their anger at the Mugabes for the country's weak economy and the poor outlook for the young.
Just before his resignation, Parliament had begun the formal process of ousting Mugabe. Thousands of people gathered at an impeachment party and many took turns sharing what they want to see for the country, as well as for Mugabe and his wife, Grace. Gift Ostalos is the spokesperson of Tajamuka, a social movement that shut down the country last year while staging protests against government.
Robert Mugabe must be arrested. He must be arrested and face the crime that he committed. Grace Mugabe must be arrested. These young people were also calling for the immediate withdrawal of the PC which was given to Grace Mugabe.
That was Gift Ostalos with the social movement Tajamuka.
Around the world, diplomats and political leaders saw a moment that could move Zimbabwe forward economically and politically. Here in Washington, D.C., U.S. Acting Secretary of State for African Affairs Donald Yamamoto said that Donald Trump administration believes Zimbabwe has an opportunity to chart a new path.
What we don't want is a manipulation by the government or by the ZANU-PF by saying holding rush elections, not taking consideration a lot of the reform issues that the opposition has that wants to implement. Also, not giving an ability or political space for the Zimbabwe people to kind of express what they want to see in a new government. Because it is a process, and it really has to reflect and be accountable to the people of Zimbabwe.
Despite the optimism that Mugabe's departure has created, there are many people in Zimbabwe and overseas who say it may not be realistic to expect dramatic change after all. After all, they say, the ZANU-PF remains in power and Mnangagwa has reputation as a cunning political operator. Diwa Mavinga, the Southern Africa Director for Human Rights Watch, shared his concerns with VOA in November.
As I said before, these are cut from the same cloth, and as one ZANU-PF supporter said in jubilation as he celebrated, they said ZANU-PF has simply changed the head of the train, but the train continues moving, it's the same train. So in terms of the infrastructure, if you like, of authoritarianism and violence, it remains intact and has now shifted its loyalty to Mnangagwa. So it remains to be seen really whether Zimbabwe will move in a different political direction than that which we had witnessed under Mugabe.
Vateereri veStudio 7 tinoda kukuzivisai kuti tava nezvimwe zvirongwa zvakatanga zvatichange tichikupakurirai kubva na 6 a.m. kuseni kwega kwega na 2 p.m. masikati ega ega nechirongwa chenyu chamagaro ziva cha 7 p.m. mazuva ose. Munokwanisa kutibata pa 909 medium wave frequency, pa 4930 shortwave, 15580 shortwave, ne 6080 shortwave mazuva ose. musakangana kuti tichangezve tichitetsenyura pa Facebook page yedu ye VOA Shona. Kana musati mafarira Facebook page yedu, ibvai maenda ikoko motsvaga pakanzi like mubva matifarira. Toku yeuchidzai zvakare, zvirongwa izvi zvinenge zvichiitwa na 6 a.m., 2 p.m. na 7 p.m. manheru ega ega. Musakanganwe.
And there are warnings that Western nations will not soon turn on the funding tap and ease economic sanctions imposed on top figures in the Mugabe government, many of whom are serving in the new administration. After all this change, people in Zimbabwe still have to get on with daily life. Blessing Zulu with the VOA Zimbabwe service is in Harare, and he spoke with us about life in the country now.
Unfortunately, nothing much has changed, and you know, the biggest challenge for the Mnangagwa administration is how to address the economic crisis, because many people who were hopeful that the oust of former President Robert Mugabe was going to help, unfortunately, it is not. Prices have been prices of basic commodities continually going up. For example, the price of bread shot up by 10% from $1 to about $1.10 before reversed following government intervention. But as the government restored bread to its initial price, inflation quickened to about 2.94%. And there's also been an increase of most basic commodities like fresh carpenter. We shot up to $14 in most retail outlets from about $10. Cooking oil, for example, rose from $2.80 to $4. And, you know, so it has been a round of price increases all around, and people are saying, you know, there's nothing much that has changed.
What are the expectations for the coming year in terms of both the economy and political change?
In terms of the economy, the new president is promising much. He is saying that, for example, he has given his ministers a 100-day work plan to deliver. He is also saying that his economic turnaround will be benchmarked by agriculture reform and also mining. And he's also saying government is going to tackle the rapid price increases. He is also promising to fight corruption. We have seen a number of ministers being arrested, former ministers rather. And he is also pledging that the elections next year will be free and fair. So if he delivers, that will be good for Zimbabweans. But many are now beginning to doubt that there will be much in terms of change.
Is there any expectation or sense of greater freedom for critics of the government and artists?
Indeed, you can tell that for 7 years, Zimbabweans really felt that they were free to talk, but not free after talking. Now, walking down the streets, you can hear people complaining about the previous government, about the current government. You know, they never used to do that. You get into buses or the so-called combis, the commuter omnibuses. You hear people talking about the economy, talking freely about politics. So in that front, it has changed, as well as for the artists. You had, for example, artists like United States-based Thomas Mapumo, whose music was not being played. It was banned by the previous Robert Mugabe regime. But now you can hear the music of Thomas Mapumo. So on that front, things have changed.
It's the festive season, which usually is a big deal in Zimbabwe. How are celebrations looking today, this year? Is there a change in how people are celebrating compared with years past?
I think, you know, the Christmas festivities have been dampened by the price increases. Many are saying that maybe the retailers are taking advantage of that, because usually around this time, that is when Zimbabweans spend a lot, you know, just like Thanksgiving in America. This is the equivalent of their Thanksgiving. But unfortunately, the price increases have just dampened the spirit of Christmas. But of course, There are some who traditionally go to their rural areas, but the problem there is also that buses are increasing prices, taking advantage of the number of people who will be going to the rural areas. So bus fares have also gone up. So everything has really gone up.
That was VOA's Blessing Zulu in Harare, speaking with my colleague Kate Pound Dawson.
Njani mathabe Zulu linjani Zulu kandaba sifisa ukulibekela ukuthi silethulela indaba ezimqotho ngeZimbabwe suku zonke ngo 6 am 2 pm la 7 pm eZimbabwe lisibamba kumakakasi athi 909 meter wave 4930 15580 la ku 6080 shortwave frequencies lila kunjalo ukusithola ebulenjini bokuzilibazisa ku Facebook ukhasi lethule VOA Ndebele. Land of sunshine, land of
You're listening to Zimbabwe Today from Voice of America. I'm Kudzanai Mutetwa in Washington, D.C.
We continue with our special taped edition of Zimbabwe Today. The year 2017 has been a dynamic but challenging year for African governments and democracy, with several high-profile political changes from Angola to Zimbabwe.
Jill Craig, VOA's East Africa correspondent, takes a deeper look at developments in Kenya. The country's month-long political roller coaster finally came to an end in November, when President Uhuru Kenyatta was sworn in for his second term.
Kenya's months-long political roller coaster finally came to an end in November, when President Uhuru Kenyatta was sworn in for his second term. Opposition leader Raila Odinga has threatened to hold his own inauguration, but got a stern warning from the government not to do so. From Nairobi, Jill Craig recaps this historic year in Kenyan politics.
Please repeat after me.
I, Uhuru Kenyatta.
Those words from Kenya's President Uhuru Kenyatta in November concluded an unusually drawn-out 2017 election season. After the country's August polls, in which Kenyatta was declared the winner over Raila Odinga, the Supreme Court annulled the presidential election, citing irregularities in the transmission of election results. In its ruling, the Supreme Court highlighted the Electoral Commission, or IEBC's, refusal of a court order to open its computer servers.
Leaves us with no option but to accept the petitioner's claims that the IEBC's IT system was infiltrated and compromised, and the data therein interfered with, or IEBC's officials themselves interfered with the data, or simply refused to accept that it had bungled the wool transmission system and were unable to verify the data.
So the court ordered the IEBC to hold a new poll within 60 days. After continued demands for IEBC reforms, Odinga decided to withdraw from the October 26th rerun election and urged his supporters to boycott the polls. Kenyatta was announced the winner of the second election. Odinga argued that Kenyatta lacked legitimacy given the low voter turnout. Two petitions filed in the Supreme Court challenged the decision, but this time the court upheld the election results. Odinga responded by announcing the creation of a resistance movement and threatening to conduct his own inauguration. The Attorney General had this response.
The criminal law of the Republic of Kenya in Article 40 of the Penal Code provides or stipulates that that sort of process is high treason. It is high treason in respect of the person so involved and any other person facilitating that process.
Many fear the installation of Odinga as an alternative president could increase tension in a country where more than 70 people were killed during election-related violence. Kenyans now wait to see if their newly elected officials will use 2018 to promote peace and fulfill their campaign promises. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
This year, Somalia elected a new president as it battled severe droughts and resurgence in Al-Shabaab in October. The worst terror attack in the country's history killed more than 500 people. Meanwhile, the U.S. military is ramping up its military operations as the African Union draws down to its 10-year-old peacekeeping mission. We have correspondent Jill Craig again with more on Somalia's year.
In 2017, Somalia elected a new president as it battled severe drought and a resurgent Al-Shabaab. In October, the worst terror attack in the country's history killed more than 500 people. Meanwhile, the U.S. military is ramping up its military operations as the African Union draws down its 10-year-old peacekeeping mission. From Nairobi, VOA's Jill Craig has more. After months of political wrangling and questions of whether a fair election could be conducted amid rampant vote buying, Somalia's parliament elected a new leader in February, Mohamed Abdullahi Mohamed, better known as Farmajo. Farmajo's win was influenced by Somalia's past 27 years of insecurity, according to former Puntland government minister Ali Ahmed Fattah.
So people were looking for a fresh start, and I think Farmajo was seen as a honest politician, you know, by most people, including the new parliamentarians that came in to town shortly before that election.
Many Somalis want to see changes before the next election, including the introduction of a one-person, one-vote system. In December, the country started registering and accrediting independent political parties for the first time in nearly 50 years. But insecurity remains a serious problem. In October, the worst terrorist bombing in the country's history, blamed on the terrorist group Al-Shabaab, killed more than 500 people at one of Mogadishu's busiest intersections. Meanwhile, U.S. military involvement in Somalia has increased. The U.S. said an airstrike on an Al-Shabaab training camp in November killed more than 100 militants. The Independent Bureau of Investigative Journalism says the U.S. carried out at least 30 drone strikes this year in the country. But as the U.S. steps up its involvement in the region, the African Union is drawing down its forces. The first batch of 1,000 soldiers are to leave Somalia by the end of the year, though the AU says a total withdrawal will be dictated by conditions on the ground. Somalia says it plans to take over security responsibilities from the AU. A security force of 22,000 is to be created, and Turkey opened a new military base near Mogadishu in September to help train Somali forces. In the midst of these political and security challenges was the drought, which affected millions of Somalis as their animals died and they went hungry. But Fattah warns against giving up hope.
I think we are hopeful, and I think the international community is also hopeful about Somalia. And Somalia, Somalis are indefatigable group, you know, they are not easily discouraged.
Not discouraged and hoping that 2018 will bring progress towards stability. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
As in Somalia, much of Africa struggled against terrorism, particularly from religious extremists. With the Islamic State's self-declared caliphate largely retaken in Iraq and Syria, U.S. officials are concerned about where the group could try to concentrate its next hub, and Africa may be the likely target. As VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb reports, the U.S. military is trying to prevent Islamic extremism from taking advantage of the African continent's vast ungoverned spaces.
Poverty, political disillusionment, and masses of young, unemployed Muslims. Those are ideal conditions for Islamic extremism, and they are all found in Africa. Congressman Michael McCaul is the chair of the House Homeland Security Committee.
If we're trying to look in the future, it's actually happening now, that Africa is going to be the spot. It's going to be the hot spot.
The entire African continent has less than half the number of American troops deployed in Afghanistan. But increases in terrorist activity are among the reasons why the American military presence has grown rapidly on the continent, from 3,200 military personnel in 2009 to about 6,500 today.
there is African concern that the U.S. approach is becoming rather more militarized or more concerned with military and security issues than had been the case in the past.
John Campbell, who served as ambassador to Nigeria under President George W. Bush, told VOA the main thrust of effort on the continent should be on what he calls the root causes of extremism, lack of economic development, and poor governance. But this effort will likely prove more difficult if the State Department's budget is slashed by a third, as forecast in the administration's budget plan.
Is, in fact, a security approach going to work? And I would suggest that, by and large, no.
U.S. Africa Command, which oversees military activities on the continent, aims to strengthen local African militaries to combat Islamic extremists. Africa's growing young male population is ripe for recruitment. According to Africa Command's senior enlisted leader, Command Chief Master Sergeant Ramon Colon Lopez.
You have no options. And here comes an extremist that is offering you a motorbike and a bride. What do you think you're going to do? Your family's starving, you can't provide for them, and somebody's giving you an option.
The administration this year expanded the authority to strike al-Shabaab and Islamic State fighters in Somalia, allowing offensive strikes against the militants, rather than just strikes defending African allies and their American advisors.
It definitely helps because we're doing our best to go ahead and employ our assets to help them out in any way we can.
But the war against extremism in Africa has not come without a cost. A U.S. Navy SEAL died aiding Somali security forces against al-Shabaab in May, and four American soldiers were killed in an October Islamic State ambush in Niger. If the security needs grow in coming months, more American troops could find themselves facing dangerous situations across the African continent. Carla Babb, VOA News, The Pentagon.
That is it for us this evening, a special taped edition of VOA's Zimbabwe Today. I'm Chidunjeri.
And I'm Kutsunai Mutetwa. We'll be back again with our live show tomorrow at 9:30 p.m. Zimbabwe time for the latest news and analysis in English. VOA Shana and Dabela broadcast can be heard at 7 a.m., 2 p.m., and 7 p.m. Zimbabwe time.
Stay with us around the clock on Facebook at Studio 7, VOA Ndebele, and VOA Shona, as well as our VOA website, www.studio7news.com.
Baby, when you call me daddy, it looks like my wife.